today's our first proper Monday. That is not the welcome that last Monday was, right? So like I said before, Mondays are going to be a little bit more mental, okay, which means like the mind is going to wrap its head around certain concepts that then we'll work on throughout the week with the homework on the Thursdays and in the workshop. Okay, so that means that there's a little bit more theory, right, and like kind of understanding things. But in any case, I still want us to remember that we want to tap into this information, not from a place of like accumulating knowledge, because that's really a lot of what the masculine is, right? And it's that world that we live in. And it's also a pattern. It's a pattern of the hardworking perfectionist woman who thinks she has to prove herself out in the world and that has to accumulate ridiculous amounts of knowledge in order to prove that she is enough or that she's worthy to perform or that she is capable of doing something. Do you all know which pattern I'm talking about? Right? And it's that also that pattern of, welcome on ice. It's that pattern of, I don't know enough, so I'm not good enough to do something. I need to know more, right? I need to have, I need to do a degree. I need to get a degree, right? I need to get a degree. And that pattern also plays out in, I need to study more. I need to have another degree. Let me do a master's. Let me get a PhD. So then people take me seriously. So that then I actually do what I want to do in the world because I need so much external validation because I don't yet believe I'm fully capable of this.
Samantha, I was thinking about enrolling into a master's this year. So funny you say that.
Mm. Well, and by the way, I always want to be clear, you know, sometimes you know that I have an intense personality. I just want to lay this out there and that I talk passionately. And when I talk passionately about certain topics, like what I just said about the master's, or sometimes I talk about masculine energy, or I'll talk about many different things. I'm never shaming that thing as something bad ever. Like, oh, that is never. It's just, I go in that extreme so that you understand how we might connect with that, right? So it's like doing a master's degree is not on any means a bad thing. It's more you tuning into yourself and being like, when we are acting, which we're going to talk about today, where is this coming from, right? Is this coming from that alignment, you know, of like what I truly want? Like what is driving, what voice, what belief, what thought, which is exactly what we're going to talk today, is driving that decision? Is it unworthiness and fear of not being enough? Is it having to prove something to someone or to the voice that my parents represents or to that teacher I had in school that shamed me and told me I wasn't good enough and now I have to prove something back? And is that why I'm doing a master's degree, right? So it's to have the right line of questioning to know where that is coming from. And this pattern that I just wanted to mention is just to remember that. I love this quote from actually Brené Brown. It says, knowledge is only rumor until it lives in the bones. Okay. Knowledge is only rumor until it lives in the bones. And so, you know, I had to actually stop myself from studying. I made a promise to myself about 4 years ago. And I said to myself, okay, Samantha, you finish your master's degree, and you have like 25 other degrees and a million things. You cannot study anything else until you have applied everything you've learned. It's forbidden, because I knew it was just this path. And I also, there's another part of me, by the way, I do love knowledge. And I love the creation of theories, and I write, so I write a lot, right? So this is part of my purpose and what I want to do. Yeah, it's not just, I'm not hiding behind the knowledge, but to make sure that I wasn't hiding behind the knowledge and that it wasn't a pattern of not enoughness and hiding, I was like, okay, you want to do stuff with this knowledge, don't you? Isn't that why you're accumulating it? So what are you going to do with it? Show me that you're going to get out there, and then you can go on and study a little bit more. Okay. And I did that. That's exactly what I have been doing for the past, 4 years. Yeah. So that's it. I just wanted to remind us of that and not get obsessed with the knowledge, because the knowledge is not going to create any change in our lives. And that's why we're here, because there will be bits of knowledge that you'll love, I hope. And then we're going to apply that and see how it feels, like Brené Brown, when that lives in the bones. Not just when we have all these theories and beautiful notes and quotes that we love to look back on. Okay, that being said, let's just do a little short meditation to drop us, okay? Drop us into our body, so that we are listening with our full body in how the information is landing, and not with a mental analysis of what is being said, but how this impacts you, how it makes you feel the information that you're getting today. All right. So just take a moment and in this stillness, start taking a deep breath in through your belly and out through your nose. And again, really feel that oxygen going into your body. Hello. Thank God I opened my eyes to look at the phone. I was just like rolling in the meditation by myself.
I'm back. You had frozen for a good 30 seconds before one of us was like, is it just me or is that her?
Oh my gosh.
All right. Get back in the zone.
Okay, well, Jess is here now, so let's start the meditation again with her.
Hey.
Hey, Jess. Welcome.
I've got my camera off because I've got a lot of chaos in the background, but yeah, hey.
All right, we're just doing a short meditation, and then my Zoom dropped off, and I was meditating by myself. Try that one more time. Okay. Okay. All right. I feel like laughing so much more. Okay. All right. I'm good. All right, beautiful ones. One more time. Come back with me. Take a deep breath in through your belly. Any body movements that you do have to do to come into stillness, go ahead and do them at this moment. And this is to bring the energy from the mind into the body, tuning into it, understanding how it's feeling, rather than operating from the head. So when you find stillness, just start taking again a deep breath into your belly, inflating it fully, and out through your nose. As you breathe in, really feel that oxygen just swish through your entire body, filling you up. And as you release, feel yourself sinking into your body, really sinking into the chair. Breathe in that peace, that presence. And as you breathe out, feel your body get a little bit heavier as your shoulders drop. With every breath, just get a little bit more present with any sensations that are going on in the body. Just notice. As you keep breathing, and as you hear my voice, tune in. could be subtle, very subtle sensations that you don't notice because of the noise. Or it could be bigger ones that you've been feeling all day, or that you just start to notice now. And just breathe into whatever state you are in right now, reminding yourself that you are exactly where you need to be right now. And that everything that is present within you is perfectly okay. And before we finish, just bring your attention to your heart space and breathe into that area. And take a moment to thank yourself for anything you'd like right now. As you thank yourself and bring in that energy of gratitude, I just want to invite you to bring a slight smile to your face. It could be very, very subtle or a bigger one. And how does it feel when you just give yourself a gentle smile? That compassionate gratitude. And when you're ready, you can do any movements, maybe with your neck or your fingers or wrists, to slowly come back. All right, beautiful ones. So welcome to week number two. This is Monday class number two. And with this energy that we very briefly in these few minutes, if you manage to connect to it, I want to start off the class with that energy, with the mindset of curious self-inquiry. All right, curious self-inquiry. And there's this word in Buddhist practices. It's one of the four virtues of Buddhism. It's called maitri. And it is this trait of unconditional friendliness. Unconditional friendliness and compassion. Okay, and we can have this maitri for other people. But right now, the mindset I want to bring in today and for all of the sessions that we'll have, when we practice this curious self-inquiry and we start asking ourselves questions and uncovering things about ourselves, right, that maybe are new, that maybe are difficult to see, that we bring in this energy of maitri, okay, of this unconditional friendliness with everything we're discovering, that curiosity. Right. And because part of this process is that we're falling in love with ourselves and all of the parts of ourselves that we discover. Okay. So that's really the mindset that I want to bring in for today and anytime things feel a little heavy. And the way that I like to connect with my theory is by bringing in that breathing into my heart space, where I really tap into that energy, you know, where I really have that bit of gratitude for bringing myself where I am, for being brave enough to do this work, thanking myself for trying hard, because it's easy in self-development work to fall into a pattern where you always have more work to do, right? Or there's something else you haven't seen, or, oh my God, I'm so fucked up. I have so much to do. And that's not the pattern. That's not the mindset or the energy we want to walk into self-development work with. Okay. It's with that unconditional friendliness and compassion towards ourselves. So that being said, I'd like you all to reflect for a moment, because we'll be working with this thing that you write. I'll give you just 2-3 minutes to write down, if you have your journal there, at least one thought that you have had recently that hasn't been very helpful. Okay, a thought that you've had, I'll write it in the chat, that has not been very helpful. I'll give you 2-3 minutes to think about this. So, and if you are still thinking, you can go ahead and keep thinking about it. Thank you for those of you who shared. We'll be working with this later. And by the way, I do want the Mondays for there to be a discussion. All right. So there is going to be like talking. And then if you have any questions, write them or write them in the chat and we'll create a discussion, because that's where the juicy stuff really happens. Okay. It's not, doesn't have to be just me talking all the time. So basically, what today, the theme of today, the topic is putting the mind in its place. Okay, that is the purpose of today. And what I want to explain to you today is that there is no such thing as reality. All right, there is no such thing as reality, and there are as many versions of reality as there are human beings. Okay, so what the mind does, the mind is a programmable software. That's how I want you to see it. It's literally a programmable software. Okay. And it's almost like a phone. It's like, okay, the phone, the actual carcass is your body, right? That like carries everything inside of it. The software is just the what's programmed into it. And you can get software upgrades. You can put a plug in and connect, change the software completely. And what this software does, right, is that it's programmed in a way that it takes the information from outside, and it's way too much information for you to actually process, right? It's way too much. So what it does is it picks out the things that it interests it, and then it filters it, okay? And these filters, what they do is usually they generalize information. So they create themes, right? Like, oh, I don't know. Men are stupid. Obviously, that's a joke, right? But that is a kind of generalization that some women might make after having terrible experiences with 2 or 3 men, right? These are the kind of generalizations that the mind makes. Another thing that it does is it distorts, right? So for example, we see something, right, that we don't understand, and then the mind thinks it makes it into something else. Right, and that could be, and I'm going to put couples arguments because they're very easy right now, but imagine, you know, like your partner says, hey, I don't want to go for a walk. And then the mind is like, he doesn't love me, right? So it actually takes the information and fits it into something that the mind understands. It distorts it into something that makes sense for it. And the last thing it does is eliminate. Okay, so it eliminates things that doesn't serve it. So obviously we will have a conversation, like even right now with the information that I'm giving you. How much of what I say today is your brain going to eliminate? A big portion of it. And it's only going to retain certain things depending on your system. And for Maureen or for Flavia or for Chiara, different things will be eliminated and different things will be remembered depending on what is the most relevant for their filters. Because maybe something reminded them of their childhood, right? Or maybe something reminded Anaïs of some conversation she had yesterday, so then she really remembered that. And those are the filters that are created in our mind. So this is really a really big revelation, because once you understand that, you understand that the software that you have running your brain actually creates your reality. Okay, and this seems a bit abstract right now, but we're going to understand it a lot deeper with ourselves. Okay, so literally the software has the ability to change our life, how we are experiencing reality, and what we think is possible, and therefore our future. Okay, and another one of these filters that affect these three like filtering mechanisms is our personality. So our personality, which we'll be talking about later, is also filtered, right? So like our personality actually takes the perceptions, motivations, emotions, and just takes what is the most useful for it and eliminates other things. That's also one of the biggest functions of personality. And a lot of personality traits have been created for like survival. A lot of psychology like kind of puts everything on what has been the most useful for survival in the long term. Okay, so a lot of personality traits have been developed for that, for what is the most useful. Now, nowadays, it might not be the most useful for the environment that you are in. Yeah, and this is where we have to look at ourselves and say, hey, is this trait or are these filters really useful for me right now? Okay, so I'm actually going to show you a video that shows this very, very well. Okay. So, and I need you to pay really close attention to this, because you have to, it's a few minutes, but you have to really, really look at it. Can you all see the black thing that says how many times are the players? Can you see that? Yeah. Okay, so this is your job, okay? You have to count how many times the players wearing white shirt, how many times they pass the ball. All right, if some of you have already seen this, just watch it and do it again. But if you've already done this, do it again, okay? And sorry, wait, let me put the sound. I forgot to put the sound. Share sound. Okay, you can all see it, right? Okay, here we go. So how many times the players wearing white pass the ball? I don't care.
Right, pass the ball.
White.
The correct answer is 16 passes.
Did you guys get it right? No?
13.
Okay.
I did.
Okay.
Did you spot the gorilla?
How many of you saw the gorilla?
I couldn't see, actually. But I see the gorilla.
No?
Did anyone else see the gorilla? You saw it, Anaïs?
Yes.
Did anyone else see it?
No.
Okay, cool.
For people who haven't seen or heard about a video like this before, about half missed the gorilla.
But I couldn't count because it was not working.
If you knew about the gorilla, you probably saw it. But did you notice the curtain changing color or the player on the black team leaving the game?
No.
Let's rewind and watch it again. Here comes the gorilla, so and there goes a player,
So there's a gorilla in the middle.
From red to gold.
That most people don't see. The curtain is changing color and one of the players left.
When you're looking for a gorilla, you...
So the point of this... I'm so sorry. I don't know what's happening with my internet. All right. So sorry about that. So the point of this is incredible because the point is that when the mind is looking for something, you don't see anything else. And it is so incredibly powerful how your thoughts and your beliefs shape your reality, that you, and what's crazy, all right, is that you actually think that that is reality. You think that is what's true. And that is how most people live, right? In their version of reality or their opinions and their belief system, where, to give an example with this, it's like, no, there was no gorilla. Are you crazy or what? So they're just not able to see certain parts of the experience that other people are seeing because of their version of reality and their filters. And this is very important, not only to understand our own versions of reality and the thoughts and the beliefs that are running our show and what information in the world we're picking up on and what information we're eliminating, okay, which is creating our life and how we experience life. But it's also really important as a tool for compassion for others, right? And understanding that there is not one way to see reality and that everyone's experience is really created by the filters and programs that they have. Okay. So the one of the things that we're going to do this week, that's the main focus, and it's really going to be the focus of Saturday as well, is understanding the blueprint or the narrative and internal dialogue that is going on inside of our heads. Okay. And what we're going to understand about it is how useful is it? How useful are some of the thoughts and belief systems that are installed in this software? And not only how, because we're going to ask ourselves two things. One, is it really true? And you guys can think about the thoughts that you reflected on today that I asked you, the unhelpful thought, right? So a first question we can ask ourselves is this really true? If so, what overwhelming amount of evidence do I have that this is true? Tell me the overwhelming amount of evidence that you have that this thought is true. So the first thing we need to understand is it really, really, really true? And the second thing is it useful? Well, obviously it's not because we identified an unhelpful thought. That was the prompt. But we're going to do this with many other thoughts and beliefs we have in our head. Is it useful? And and this is really important, okay? Because in everything we will do throughout the program, with emotions, with thoughts, with anything we are experiencing, there is no such thing as good or bad. Okay, there are no bad thoughts. There are no good thoughts. There's just helpful or unhelpful, or as I call it, towards or away from. Is it taking me towards the person I want to be? Is it taking me towards the future I want, which we'll talk about later? Is it taking me towards my goals and aspirations and dreams? Or is it pulling me away from them? Because good or bad will radically depend on the person who is experiencing it. And good or bad, when we talk about good or bad, we get into these like moralistic debates, right? We don't want to go there. We just want to understand, is this helping me? Is this helping me grow and helping me move forward? Or is this holding me back and keeping me stuck? Okay, that's how we're going to talk about and handle thoughts and beliefs, right? So now let's understand a little bit how this software came about, because we all have a software, right? We all have a mind. And we talked about the software is like the subconscious mind. Okay, it's like the program running in the background. You're not consciously filtering, right? You didn't say, let me not look at that gorilla. You didn't choose not to look at it. It was your subconscious brain that did it for you, because your brain was focused on something else. So it's really interesting how the unconscious is doing it. But let me tell you, your eyes, like the information wasn't, the gorilla was in front of your eyes for all of you. For all of you. Your subconscious brain decided not to see it because it wasn't useful for the goal that you had in mind. Are you all with me? Okay. So that's exactly what's happening in your life. Okay. You have this subconscious running the show, and then your conscious mind, like the you that thinks it's you, because you're like, yeah, it's me. I have choice. I make decisions. I can see a gorilla if I want to see the gorilla. The one you think is you, that's the conscious mind. And that, I'm going to keep going with this phone analogy, that is the interface. It's like the screen, you know? And so when you're interacting with the phone, you think that the screen is the phone, but it's not. It's just what you see about it. It's just like the interface, okay? Really, the phone is all this, like the fact that you press a button and that something happens is this whole programming that is behind it that you cannot see. And that is exactly how we function, okay? So now, who programmed this software? That's the question. And how is it programmed? And what's up with this? Because obviously, if we're all here and unapologetic, we need a damn software upgrade. Okay. That is really what we're doing over here. We're upgrading the software, because a lot of the software, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like outdated. Okay. It's outdated for the reality that we live in today, and for the person that we want to become and the mission that we have. This blueprint that we have in our subconscious mind, the belief system, comes from many different places. All right. One of the places that it comes from is the society that we grew up in. Okay. And this is a big one. This is a big one, because obviously this programming came to us through TV shows, magazines, school. Any form of repetitive messaging that you got was really good at programming the software. Okay, and we're not aware of this. What we're doing right now is trying to make a lot of the unconscious conscious, right? So Disney movies, happy endings, right? Of the prince and the princess getting married and living happily ever after, deep programming, right? I don't know, everyone being with someone and being in relationship, right? Programming. So then it just starts sending all of these messages. Being single, there's something wrong with you. If your relationship doesn't work or you're having problems, there's something wrong with you, right? Whatever. Let's. I'm not going to get into this too deep, because I can get very intense, passionate about this. But let's just for a moment address the crazy amount of programming that there is around being a woman. And the crazy amount of programming there is around how we are supposed to look and what makes a woman desirable, and how desirability and prettiness and beauty seem to be one of the main functions that women have in society today. And that is very much a system that is created by the patriarchy. And let's be really honest, okay? Like, let's just say how it is. If anyone disagrees, I'm happy to have a discussion about it later, because this is not, you don't. And by the way, I just want you to tell you, don't take anything I tell you as the truth. You have the truth. Okay? I'm giving you information. I'm giving you my truth. After my years of study and experience, you question everything and see how it lands and fits for you in your world, okay, and your truths. I do not have the answer, all right? Some of this might resonate. Question what you like, and that's where the best parts come out. But we live in a society where the value system and the belief system was mostly shaped by white men. The end. Okay? All the movie makers, all the top corporations, all the decision making that happens on top levels on planet Earth are by white men. So it is, and it's so deeply embedded, we don't realize, right? There's so many things that happen, like, and I'm going to give you the example of this, all right? The Me Too movement. You all know about the Me Too movement, right? So the Me Too movement was, and this actually happened to me recently, where I had an experience, okay, in Milan when I was 18 years old, that I had completely brushed off, like, men. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like, wait, why do I think that's normal? You know? And that is really what happened in us being like, wait a second, it's actually not that normal that guys can just, you know, like throw themselves on you and then you have to defend, you know, and then a lot of us were like, oh wait, like that does suck. That shouldn't be that way. We should hold those people accountable. There's a law in Australia now that don't quote me on this because I'm really bad at remembering like very specific details of these things, but it was like you legally cannot, if you've been raped, you cannot bring up the name of the perpetrator. So like, where is the accountability? Like, where are we being held responsible for our actions? You know? And so the point is, we have, and this is not to, let's not go to society because we're talking about ourselves here. This societal value system and belief system is so deeply programmed into our subconscious that we do not realize the extent to which we think our bodies have to look a certain way or we're not desirable. We do not realize it. It is so, it's like the gorilla thing. It's happening behind the scenes. So that's one of the big places where this programming comes from, okay? Obviously another one is your parents' belief system and value system is a huge one, okay? Huge one. So the messaging that you heard growing up in your family, right? And this is around so many things. Around relationships, your parents' relationships set the programming and belief system around what is possible or correct or right or wrong in relationships for you. So you, whatever happened in your parents' household, unless you've done a lot of therapy, you think that's normal. And you subconsciously, again, subconsciously think that is the standard. Of course, what other standard are you going to have? The one you saw at your house. That's one of the most clear unconscious programmings. And we will tend in life, by the way, we will tend unconsciously to recreate the home environment we had. So our unconscious is looking for partners that resemble our mom or dad. That's how it is. You're not doing it on purpose. You're doing it unconsciously. And that's the power of this work. And that's the power of therapy. That you're like, wait, unconscious mind, I see what you're doing there. Trying to get me back into those old patterns and that thing that you think is familiar. But do I really want this for myself? Is this really helpful? And that's where you make the unconscious conscious. Okay. And the same goes with money, right? Beliefs about money, beliefs about what you're capable of. Beliefs around entrepreneurship, you know, for example, and by the way, this can be bad things or unhelpful things or useful things too. Like in for example, I'm very lucky in my case that even though I had a lot of like self-doubt and feelings that I didn't know how I was going to make things like come alive. And I was also very oversensitive. So I had all these beliefs that I had to overcome. My family, all of my family, mom side, dad side, everyone is an entrepreneur. Nobody has a job. You know, nobody has a job. And so part of my belief system when I was growing up, I'm like, okay, but they all do it, right? Like, this is what's normal. And actually in my world, getting a job it's not normal. Like when people have jobs, I'm like, oh, you have a job? I'm like, there's another path. Do you want to talk about it? you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but that just became my normal. That's my system. So there might be helpful things in there or unhelpful things in there. So think about beliefs around money, around relationships, around your own self-worth, because we're all women here. So very likely our mom's belief system was passed on to us. What your mom thinks she is capable of, or what your mom thinks is possible in the world, she told you about it because she wants you to be realistic and she wants to keep you safe. And it's only natural, right? Like, it's only natural to pass on. Can you all hear me? Oh my God, internet, please. Can you guys hear me? Ladies, I'm deeply sorry. I really don't know what's happening, so please excuse me. So the programming, what was the last thing I was saying?
Your mom.
Yeah. Like whatever your mom thinks of you or whatever, it's what you exactly. are and what you think. Yeah.
Exactly. So her self-worth and her beliefs around the world and life were probably passed on to you. And there is this thing, I might cover it a little bit later or on Thursday, but not today. There's this thing called the mother wound that is known in psychology, okay? And it comes from, basically to summarize it, this bit of resentment that is created towards our mothers for not finalizing our initiation out into the world. And kind of for limiting us with her own limiting beliefs and what's possible for the world, instead of allowing us to step fully into that potential and be initiated out into the world and become a better version of what she was. Yeah?
And what was me? How do you overcome this angerness? This
because
this
my love.
Is a trouble.
We have a lot of work to do. We're only getting started. So that is one of the wounds. There are many wounds, but that is one of them. And one of the ways, which is what we're doing, is you take responsibility for that. Okay. But first we have to see some of that wounding. So, and with our parents, okay, this is really important because really all of life boils down to this. With our parents, okay, our deepest programming came from what we were taught we had to do in order to win love. Okay, that is one of our deepest programmings. So wherever love was conditioned or withheld from us, we shamed that part of ourselves. So I'm going to say it again. One of the deepest conditionings we have is the things we had to be and do in order to gain our parents' love, in order to get love. So the things, let me put it in a very clear example, okay? If we cry and then our dad hits us on the head and say, don't be stupid, don't be a child, you know, man up, boys don't cry. My dad is telling me he will not love me if I cry. So what happens? The most important thing, everything in life, this is not a cliche, this is real. Everything in life boils down to love. We want to love and be loved, especially as a child. Being loved is the most important thing. So if there's something we are or do that cuts off our parents' love, we will shame ourselves for that. We will say, that's wrong. I need to change this. I need to modify it because I need my parents' love. So if this part about me is wrong, I will shut it down for receiving that love. And the opposite is true as well, right? If our parents say, and I'm exaggerating, okay? So please take it so you understand it. If our parents say, if you do this, I will love you. And obviously sometimes it's not so obvious, right? Sometimes it can be like just giving you a hug or a pat on the back or nice words, right? Or a gift or a Christmas card or whatever way your parents showed love. You want their approval, their love, their validation, their recognition. Every child wants their parents' love, recognition, validation, approval, no matter how much they hide it. Everyone. And if we haven't fixed, or not fixed, but healed those wounds, we still look for that as adults. And that is still driving our show, right? So basically, all of the things we had to be in order to gain our parents' approval is deeply embedded into the software. And all of the parts of ourselves we had to hide, modify, shut down so that our parents would love us, because they did not love those parts of ourselves, we have shamed and shut down. Are you all with me? And this is some of the deepest programming that we have. Now, those same experiences might have happened not only with our parents, okay? It might also happen with grandparents, with authority figures. We could even have some deep programs running from our early relationships or experiences with love. Okay, it doesn't only have to be our parents. But parents, you know, because a lot of our subconscious is programmed the first 7 years of life, okay? But we still have things like the first 20 years of our life, and we can still create these things now, right? Like our subconscious is being programmed every day. And that is the beauty of doing this work together for 12 weeks, although 12 weeks is not that long. It's a long enough period of time that I can work on your subconscious with you. Yeah? So that is really, really important, okay? That the traits, and this is why if we want to be fulfilled and happy, our parents' advice and approval and belief system is not going to work, okay? And this is part of becoming a full, mature, responsible adult, which, by the way, ladies, there are not many of these running around in the world. It is a very rare thing to have fully functioning, mature, responsible adults. Like, we do not have many in the world. Seriously.
But it shouldn't be that.
We live in a world, but let's accept reality how it is. No matter how it should or shouldn't be, all we can do is change ourselves, right? That's how the change begins. And we live in a society where, guess what? It's so much easier to point the finger and blame. And it is, and we don't want to do this. None of this work, and sometimes it happens, we're not going to point fingers at our parents. Oh, mom, you created the mother wound. Like, because then you're falling into the same pattern, right? You're becoming a victim of your past. And what really needs to be done is that you now see that, and now you take full responsibility. And that's what we're doing, right? But it's okay. And sometimes it's okay, and we'll talk about this next week when we talk about emotions, it's okay that emotions come up, right? You don't have to take full responsibility right now as you're hearing this information. Like, we might be pissed off, right? Like, I've had a lot of anger towards my father for the beliefs that were in place for me around men and how I cannot trust men. And my father's deeply embedded programming in me, and I've shared this with some of you before, like, literally only a few, like, my dad asked me if I was going to get a nose job when I was 13 for the first time. 13. I remember the day because this is one of those moments that you know those traumatic moments. That's what trauma is, that deeply creates your subconscious programming. At 13, I'm sitting in the car parking, and sorry for those of you who have heard this story, like Marine. and then we're sitting in the car parking, and my dad just turns around and he's like, super casually, like if we were two buddies having a beer, he's just like, "Hey, Sammy, have you ever thought of getting a nose job?" And I'm like, you know, like, and I was a very, very, very mature kid, like always have been. And so I told him, I was like, "Dad, like, what the fuck?" You know, I was like, "You're the only man that's supposed to love me for how I am. Like, how can you tell me that?" I start crying, and then he brushes it off, doesn't make it a big deal at all. But then he asked me again at 22, asked me again at 24, asked me again at 25, like begged me to go into the doctor's office so I could just see on the computer how it's going to look. Can you imagine what kind of programming that created? Literally, I'm not even kidding. It was like, I cannot be loved because of my nose and other parts of my body too. But let's talk just about the nose. So it just created that software inside of me. And sometimes some people have told me in the past that they like my nose. And for me, it was like, please, like, thank you for being nice and trying to, you know what I mean? Like, but that reality did not like the operating system, like the software was like, like what? That can't exist. I couldn't accept that information because it was so, so opposite to the reality that had been created within me. And then slowly I was like, but literally, and this is funny, as I say it, I realized how deeply embedded that belief was in me. That the first time somebody told me, it was like unconceivable. It was like, "Oh, you're so nice. Like, thank you for pretending to like it, you know?" And slowly I realized how, wow, I can't, like, there is a reality. There are people in the world, even if it's maybe only one, I thought back then, that could like this, you know? And it was like crazy to think about it, but it actually opened my mind to see, oh, not everyone sees the world and sees me how my dad sees it. Okay. So this is what that work looks like. That is what it looks like. And there are so many of these beliefs we have around how worthy we are. Again, what we need to do to gain love and approval. And especially tie this in with what I said. And I'm saying this again because it's so internalized. In the world, which is a lot of where we have some issues, right? Think about who you have to be in the world, or who the world and society tells you you have to be in order for people to take you seriously, in order to get approval, validation, recognition. You got to be like a man. Speak up. Dress up. Be assertive. So, and one of the biggest issues women have, and this is based on so much research, I'm happy to share this really good article with you on the Harvard Business Review, because I've done so much research on this. But there's this thing for those of you who saw the women's self-confidence course, you saw it, there's the the respect likability trade-off. Okay, so basically that women, it's like you have to choose. There's an actual trade-off in society. It's like, okay, you're either going to be liked or you're going to be respected. You can't have both. And that's a real thing that we struggle with. So it's like, okay, if I want to be respected, I have to be like a man. So I can't even be myself because I have to look a certain way, speak a certain way, show up a certain way, lead a certain way. And if I don't do those things, I'm not going to be respected because they're going to think, oh, I don't take enough space. I'm not assertive. Oh, she's too sensitive. She did that. So then I won't be sent for negotiation. So then I won't get the promotion. So then people won't take me seriously. Ah, but if I am assertive and I do speak up and I am unapologetic, however that looks like for me, it doesn't have to be like a man, it's very, very likely, proven by research, you will be less liked. And as women, we also value, so we have in personality trait, we are higher in agreeableness than men on average. And we also have like, we're more socially conscious. So we're more like, we're more tribe oriented and the well-being of the community, regardless of cultural differences of individualism and collectivism. We're just more like, you know, we take care of the family. We take care of the collective. We make sure everyone's okay. And so it's very difficult for us not to be liked. So it's like, it's very difficult, the choices that we have to be and the messages that we're told from society of how we're supposed to be, to get that love, that recognition, that respect from our partners, from relationships, or from society, or from the professional world. Okay, so what I'm saying is that there's a lot of conflicting stuff in the software, and so it's difficult to filter through, okay, so how should I be? Like, how should I be? Because it seems like that they've set us up in a trap, yeah? And obviously, let's not even, to continue and finish off, body image, yeah? How our bodies are supposed to look like in order for us to be loved. And let's, like, I think, and obviously I'm making a big call, this is not based on research, this is on what I think is very likely. I would say, I don't know, throwing it out there, that more than 90% of women have body image issues. It doesn't matter what your body looks like. Most women have body image issues because you can't get it right. And so is it a coincidence that we all have body image issues? That it's never enough? That there's so much plastic surgery going on? That there's so many industries that just cater to looks? Imagine how many industries would go bankrupt if we actually loved ourselves. Like, it would be insane. It would be ridiculous. So a lot of industries depend on our low self-worth and our low self-esteem. And like I posted the other day on Instagram, what was the thing I posted? It was like, loving yourself in a world that profits on your low self-esteem is an act of rebellion. So this is just to say a lot of stuff. Okay, that has programmed this software. And we have to take a look. We have to take a look at some of the software. I want to read you, and do you guys need a break, by the way, or are you okay? Well, if anyone does need to go to the bathroom, just go ahead. But I'll keep going since we've had some breaks. I want to read you this part of this book before I move on to shame. Have you guys heard of Louise Hay? Louise Hay, she was like basically the founder, or not the founder, but like the creator or the one who made affirmations really popular. So my mom grew up like listening to Louise Hay tapes and affirmation tapes, and she is incredible. She has been like the founder of so much of the healing movement. And this book, sorry, I forgot the name, but I think it's The Power to Heal Yourself. Or so I'll share it with you later. And I just want to read this because it just reflects everything we're saying with words that are not mine. What we think about ourselves becomes the truth for us. I believe that everyone, myself included, is responsible for everything in our lives, the best and the worst. Every thought we think is creating our future. Each of us creates our experiences by our thoughts and our feelings. The thoughts we think and the words we speak create our experience. We create the situations, and then we give our power away by blaming another person for our frustration. No person, no place, no thing has any power over us, for we are the only thinkers of our mind. When we create peace and harmony and balance in our minds, we will find it in our lives. Which of these statements sounds like you? People are always out to get me. Or everyone is always helpful. Each of these beliefs will create quite a different experience. What we believe about ourselves and about our life becomes true for us. Put another way, our subconscious mind accepts whatever we choose to believe. That they both mean what I believe about myself and what my life actually becomes true. what you think, what you choose to think about yourself and your life becomes true for you. So this is just to summarize that this software and these thoughts that are running in our head really creates our experience of reality and the future that we create and what we think is possible. All right. Because if you think about it, it is our thoughts and values that drive our actions, right? Our behavior. If you think, so to give it, I think somebody said, I'm still not good enough for this job, right? That could be a thought, or I'm not ready, or I don't know enough, right? Whatever the thought is behind, what kind of behavior is that thought likely to create, right? Probably not applying for the job, first of all, right? And so what probable future is that going to create? Well, not having the job, right? It could go in another direction where you try harder, you study, you find out what you need to do, but some part of you has to believe you can get the job if you start trying. Because if you really fundamentally believe you're not good enough for the job unconsciously, you won't even try. You won't even think it's possible. So your behavior will reflect that. And then this is where I think you guys have heard of the term a self-fulfilling prophecy. So a self-fulfilling prophecy is when basically what you think becomes true. Okay. And this is in a way, I'll give you an example. I'm ugly. I don't know. I'm just going to give an example. I'm ugly, or I'm not good looking, right? Nobody likes me. So I imagine I have this thought. Then what happens? Well, because I think I'm not good looking, I don't go on Tinder because I hate pictures of myself. So I'm not going to put a picture on Tinder, right? And then when somebody comes to meet me or talks to me at a restaurant or a bar, right? I'm going to think, oh, my mind is going to distort reality and say, this guy probably just wants me to buy him a drink because everyone wants me for my money, right? Whatever distortion that the mind creates because of your belief system. And then this guy who actually wanted to talk to you, you're going to think he only wanted you for the money because that's another belief that you have, right? And so basically, the guys that are coming to talk to you, you think it's for another reason. You don't put on a picture, and then you fulfill the prophecy. And so you confirm to yourself that you're not good enough and that you're not lovable and that you are ugly. Because you made that all happen so that you could confirm it. Are you guys with me? And this is how the subconscious plays out in life. It's looking to confirm what it already knows. This is the definition of confirmation bias. Confirmation bias, we experienced it a little bit with the gorilla here, but confirmation bias is silly example, you want a red dress. I don't know why you want a red dress, and then suddenly you start seeing the red dresses everywhere. Yeah? There are not more red dresses. Like, that did not happen. What happened is that they became relevant for your brain. So your brain started looking for it everywhere. And that is confirmation bias. And it will happen with everything that your bias or belief system wants to confirm. And it happens with us with signs, right? Like, you know, when you say, oh, that's a sign. Like, I mean, okay, sometimes things just happen when we're not looking for them. Okay, so I'm not saying everything is confirmation bias, but sometimes we are looking for the sign, right? We're out there and we're looking, oh, you see, that happened again. Oh, and you see, and you see, and you see. And our mind is looking to confirm what it already knows. So I want to ask you this. Can you imagine if the software of the programming of the software has all these beliefs about yourself? I'm not enough. I have to look a certain way to be loved. I am not worthy. Entrepreneurship is really difficult. Whatever stuff is going on, okay, think about your parents, think about your family. You know the beliefs going on in your head. Unconsciously, you are going out to confirm that evidence. Your brain is just looking. See? You see I'm not enough? You see I'm too much? Nobody can handle me. You see I'm so anxious. I'm too much. I'm never going to get over this anxiety. You see nobody respects me at work. You're going to keep looking for all of the evidence that fuels your limiting beliefs and fears unless you change the programming. And so recognizing, I mean, obviously where we still have these beliefs, and obviously to use another word that you all might be familiar with, a lot of these repetitive thoughts that lead to actions, that sequence, thought, behavior, outcome, thought, behavior, outcome, thought, that becomes a pattern, right? And so you repeat it in different moments, in different situations, and that's the pattern. Belief system creates a behavior, you end up with the same result, and then you can create a new belief about that pattern, which is like, you see, I always end up in the same place. And it's like, well, you're choosing to, is what I'm telling you now.
Sammy, can I ask a question?
Yes.
I don't know if this is like a blind spot, because from what you're saying, like me being too sensitive, I have this thought that I'm too sensitive. And so I keep...
How many others here have that thought?
Yeah, I remember you guys, the last session that I missed, I'm talking about it. Mm.
So what's your question?
I just had this moment where I'm like, well, is that what I'm doing? But I'm continuing to look for that I'm too sensitive?
Well, and we'll talk about this. We'll work with this on Saturday, because it's like, well, so it's, where did that come from, right? First of all, where did that thought, that part of the programming, where was that programmed into there? Right? So too sensitive for who? Too sensitive for what? Yeah. And then owning that and seeing that aspect of yourself in a new light. Mm. Right? Because it's the too sensitive that we need to kind of uncover. Okay. And that's what we'll do Saturday.
Thank you.
And it's great. I hope you're all becoming aware slowly of some of these beliefs, you know. This is what the journaling and the homework will be for, but the self-work, sorry. So we're all starting to see, and we all know through our patterns, and our repetitive patterns are one of the biggest keys, right, to this programming. All right. Any other questions on that? Yeah, and
Is there a way to undo those programming? To once you're aware of the way you see things is because of your parents and sort of patterns, some things that happen in your life. Is there a way to just undo it, to change that? Because being aware of it is one thing, but then knowing that it comes from there, that it's not a reality, it's not who you are. Like, how do you reconnect with that? Is there a way to do it?
Yeah, that's what we'll be doing for the next 11 weeks. No, not the whole 11 weeks, but yeah, it's definitely a process, you know? Like, it's something that there's many different methodologies to do it, and it requires things, different things, because you have to work with your emotions. Some of it will be stored physically as trauma within your body, right? Some of it will come through vocabulary and changing the way you speak. Some of it will be by changing your perspective, right? And kind of actually flipping situations and seeing them with a new light, right? So it's a combination of things that requires this reprogramming. And it's also something that is your entire life, right? Because in every new situation or new challenge that you might have, new relationship, new job, new stage of your life, right? You might come up with new beliefs, right? And you'll be like, oh my God, what is this? And is the programming helping me or not? Where do I need to shift? Okay. And as we increase our level of self-awareness, this becomes a more natural process. And hopefully you will have many tools after this program where you can kind of work on that as well, you know? So one of the other topics, and I just like us all for a moment to just take a deep breath into our bodies. And Anais, I love what you said, because you said a thing that's really important, and it's that you are not those thoughts. You are not that software. That's just a program running in your mind. And you, my beautiful friends, are the higher self that can now see that. Because if you can see it, that means it's not you. Does that make sense? You can see it. You can become aware of it. Like an observer, you can distance yourself and say, oh my God, I do have this pattern, right? And at any given moment, right, I can be here and I can, I don't know, my internet drops and I might feel nervous and be thinking, oh my God, I don't know, they're going to think I'm so unorganized and unprepared. I'm just making something up, right? And then I could see and I could observe and say, okay, Samantha, you're having a really ridiculous thought right now. Nobody's going to think that. I'm sure they're all going to understand. And I can actually create a dialogue. And who am I then? Am I the crazy one having the thoughts of fear and the fear? That's a part of me. But I am the observer. I am the higher self that can actually interact with that. And this higher self is the one I want to introduce you to right now. And is the one that we're going to be having a lot of conversations with. And it's the one that when I sit down or I could be meditating or I might be talking to myself in the mirror is the one that I'm like, hello, my love. That's her. And whether I'm talking to her or she's talking to me, I don't know. But the point is that I access her. And this is, and by the way, this is real. Like, I talk to myself a lot. I think that the most sane people do, okay, because there's way too much going on in here. And so very often I'll be caught up in a pattern. So for example, I've always had a pattern of being in a rush. Okay, my father was always in a rush. I feel like there's no time. You got to hurry up, just make everything super efficient. And this is an old pattern. I've already dealt with this. But so sometimes I just see myself being in a rush. And I literally notice it. And I'm like, and I literally stop. And I'm like, my love, Are you in a hurry for anything in particular? Literally, I ask this to myself out loud, you know? And I'm like, nope, not really. Okay, cool. So can we just chill out for a second? Or do you have to take out the dishwasher while you're listening to the podcast and while you're drawing the thing? Like, and so, and literally I'm having this conversation out loud, not in the mirror, talking to myself. And this is how I break myself from so many of my patterns. Because the autopilot just goes on the programming it knows. And it will continue to do that. And the thing about the software, right, and I know some of you might know this, is that every behavior creates a neural pathway in your brain. Okay, and a neural pathway is like a path. Like imagine it like a path, a dirt path. Okay, so every time you have walked the path, you know, it gets deeper. Like you see the trail deeper, deeper, deeper. The grass starts dying, you know what I mean? And that's exactly what happens in your head. The more you've done a behavior, a pattern, oh God, it's your brain's default path. It just goes there. So to create a new path, first, the brain, it's literally, I want you to imagine the grass or the snow, whatever, and you need to take a new route. And the software's like, error, like, we don't know this path. I don't know where to go. How do I do this? And that is literally what getting out of your comfort zone means. It's like, it's your brain's non-comfort zone. Like, it doesn't have a neural pathway or a path in the brain where it knows how to do that. So at first, it's like, I don't know how to do this. It feels weird. What is this? Is it right? Is it wrong? Oh my God, right? And all this stuff is happening where you're doubting it. But when you do it once, the brain's like, okay, we didn't die. Okay. Because the brain's always trying to keep you safe. We didn't die. That was not that bad. And then the next time it kind of remembers, because the body remembers and the brain remembers. And so you kind of know a little bit. And then the more you do it, the more that neural pathway is reinforced in the brain. And this, if you guys have heard the latest discovery in neuroscience, is the term neuroplasticity. And this also answers your question, Anais, as to how we change that, right? So neuroplasticity is the brain's physical, literal ability to change shape. And the only way it changes shape is through behavior. Not through knowledge. Through behavior. Through actions in a different direction. So this is where we are taking another step in full radical responsibility. I'm telling you now, now that you are aware, you choose if you continue to reinforce the old patterns and the old beliefs, or you slowly start to look at them. And even if you don't know how, because you don't have to know how right now, you're like, I want to change them. I want to change some of these beliefs. And obviously you're here because you want to do that. So I already know you do. Now the next step is we're going to uncover which ones are some of those beliefs that are embedded that we need to rewire and reprogram and create new neural pathways in our brain, in a new belief system. All right. Another topic I wanted to talk about before finishing is shame. Okay, because obviously shame is really intertwined with the programming, and especially with the topic of unworthiness, feeling like you're too much, you're not enough, right? All the parts of ourselves that we hide, that we push away, that we repress. And shame is an emotion that... And remember, we're going to cover this next week, but no emotions are good or bad. There's no such thing. It's a useful emotion that has been used mostly to promote the maintenance of social hierarchies. That's really the main use. To maintain social hierarchies is the main, like, the main use for shame itself. Okay. Now, shame itself is not a problem, because it's a healthy emotion. I mean, we have it. And shame is the emotion, basically, I like to put it this way, that makes us all not fart when we're on the tram. Okay? Like, why don't you fart when you're on the tram? Because of shame. That's the only reason. Okay? Because it's not socially acceptable. And because if someone hears it or you do, you're going to feel shame. That is the emotion that comes up. Okay? So we don't want to be shameless, because then we'd all be doing crazy shit, right? It helps maintain some social order and some of the social rules that we have created. Now, the question here is, what is the belief behind the shame, right? Is the belief useful or not? Because if we have a social norm and the social norm is, hey, you know what? Bodily functions and fluids in public, you know, because also shame can be tied to disgust. So in this case, it's two, like the farting brings up shame and disgust, and disgust is a biological function to get us away from viruses and stuff. So anyway, so the point is that that's okay. It's not that unhelpful. It's okay that we can't all fart. So let's just be shame about it. That's fine. We don't have to work on it. But if I'm ashamed to if I'm ashamed of my body, right? Of showing my legs because they're not this enough or that enough. If I'm ashamed of my hair because it's not this enough or that enough, right? If I'm ashamed of my opinion because I haven't done 3 PhDs, like, it doesn't matter. But if you're ashamed of other parts of yourself that are really, really unhelpful and that you keep hiding, that is a huge, huge problem. Okay. And the difference between guilt and shame is that guilt, usually feel guilt about something you did, about a behavior. Shame is about who you are as a person. So a person that feels shame is, I am a bad person. Where a person that feels guilt is, I did a bad thing. All right. So those are, that's the main experience. So the point is, when the problem with shame is that it can really lead to these like ruminations in our head that are degrading, and that starts to like permeate into all parts of ourselves, physical and psychological. And this is a deep like research on the topic of shame. So it gets into this really negative self-conscious thing that results in like condemning yourself and thinking that you are wrong as a person, and that you are not worthy, and that you have to hide, and that your voice is not worth listening to. Okay, so what we're gonna work with and uncover is, where have we shamed ourselves? Yeah, what are things about ourselves we are ashamed of? That parts of ourselves that we hide, parts of ourselves that we think are not worthy to be seen because people or society will judge them, will reject them. And you can also ask yourself if you're shaming other people, right? Because wherever we're like, oh, judging you, you're so this, you're so that, that's also our way of shaming others. And often what we shame in others are things we don't accept in ourselves. All right. So this thought that you guys identified at the beginning, I just want you to do a few minutes of self-reflection. And asking you where you think it came from. So where do you think, and we'll go a lot deeper into this, this is just an exploratory question. Where does this stem from, this thought? Is there a deeper belief behind it? Like, I'm not good enough, or I don't deserve something, or your worthiness, or your ability to receive love, or your need to have to be perfect in order to be loved. All right, and I want to have a quick discussion or share after I just want to finish with this, that I just want to talk to you about the shadow, okay? You might have heard about the shadow, you might have heard about shadow work, and it just really ties into this. And I know it's like a lot of concepts, but I just want to have, when we speak of this vocabulary later on, that we have it and we know what it is. And the shadow is just a psychological term for everything we can't see in ourselves, like everything that we deny in ourselves. All right. So everything we don't want to see about ourselves is in the shadow. It's that simple. And it could be things that we consider inferior, unacceptable, bad, but it could also be good things. So the shadow is not always bad, because people say like, oh, the shadow work. It's like the horrible things. No, it's not only the horrible things. We might have pushed away things we're great at. And obviously, if you can imagine tying it in with everything we've spoken about today, we will likely push into the shadow things that don't fit with our blueprint of reality. Okay, so for example, some people can't take praise, right? Like if I tell you you're really good at something and you just can't accept that about yourself, you just don't see it about yourself, right? You've pushed that out, because if you were good or you were able to see that in yourself, it would break down all of your belief system. So it's just too dangerous to see that in yourself. Because if your whole identity, and this is very big what I'm saying, okay? I understand what I'm saying is huge, but this is literally what's going to happen. If you have your whole belief system around the fact that you are not enough, and I'm just giving you are not enough as one example of a belief, and suddenly you actually see that you are enough for many things, do you know what that means for you? Your whole identity that you've built, all of your stories around your not enoughness would fall and crumble. And then who are you? Because if you're enough, oh my God, you can move to Brisbane and you can do that and you can apply for the job and you can just post shit on Instagram. And it's like the responsibility that comes with the shift in identity, like not everyone wants that. It is huge. Like it is huge. So many people, and this is the easy route, ladies, like most of the world is functioning on this. Like, I mean, I'm a coach. I can tell you, I can see clearly the path to everyone's life changing, you know, like that's what I do. And I see very clearly how people prefer not to. It's so much easier not to. It's so much easier to stay a victim of your own story. Oh, but this, but my parents, but my dad was an alcoholic, but this. Great. I mean, like what I respect it. I see it. I honor it. We all had our trauma and wounding. You decide. You want to keep that story and stay in that identity that keeps you where you are or not. But it is a dangerous thing, because if, again, some of those beliefs fall away, not everyone is willing to take the responsibility that comes with that. Because when you can actually see and own your own potential, there is shit to do. And it is scary, and it will take courage, and you might fail. So it's a lot easier to stay with the old stories. It's a lot more comfortable. The brain knows it, you know? Yeah, you'll complain. You know what I mean? But you're used to complaining too. So just, you know, it's easy. It knows it. You're familiar with it, right? You know, those old patterns. And I'm going to tell you something. Like, I'm saying this, and I've been through this. Let me tell you something as well. You will never hear me teach or preach something that I've not been through. Like, none of this is coming from knowledge, you know? I have been going through this in layers for 15 years. Like, and I still am faced with that today. Like today, before this call, I was faced with that and old patterns around relationship. And I see the pattern and I'm like, and I look at the behavior that would come if I follow that pattern. And I'm like, and you're going to go down the same path? And I'm like, is that what I want? No, that's not what I want. And is that behavior really going to lead you to, and is that really true? No, it's not really true. You know, and choosing different takes so much strength and courage. Like I cried and screamed and into a pillow and, you know, by myself. Like, it's not easy to change your identity and to dive into the possibility of what is, like, what is alive and what can be real. That is just as scary, because the fear of success that people have can be just as real as the fear of rejection. Are you all with me?
Yes, just furiously taking notes. What was that last one? Fear of success is...
can be just as real and big as the fear of failure or rejection that we have. We'll talk about this in the last month of the program, but I'm just saying you're already really brave because you're already here, and courage is certainly going to be required the entire process and afterwards. So it is not the easy task that you have taken, but like I've always said, who wants easy? I want worth it. Who wants easy? Like, we're born, we die. Like, life is a temporary experience. I did not come here just for easy. But the good news is that you can create a software, like, okay, you can reprogram yourself, let's say, okay, slowly. And this reprogramming is also called healing, okay? So you can heal yourself and create a new belief system so that it does become easier, right? So that making the choices that do take you to where you want to be and that are aligned, and choices that are not being driven by old wounds and old fears and limiting beliefs, so that that becomes more natural, right? So it's not like an uphill struggle. It's the opposite. Sometimes the beginning and seeing some of this stuff is hard, but then it becomes a lot easier. And when you surround yourself by people that also help you do that, you know, you don't feel like it's all like heavy and you're the only one. No, like, you know, you sometimes just have a conversation with somebody that gets it. Like, it could be your coach or it could be a friend, right? And you can move through things so much quicker when they come up. Okay, because feeling like you're alone with this is super heavy. It gets terrible. And you know, and the last thing that I want to tell you is, it's just because I had this sentence written and I don't want to forget it, is that a lot of these things and these beliefs, and it could be trauma, okay, which we'll talk about next week. It's like unfelt, unprocessed emotion, but it's also just like wounds. Just ways that we've been hurt, you know, ways that we've been hurt as a child. And so we've created this like just protection mechanisms to not be hurt like that again. Because it sucks being hurt. Nobody wants to be hurt. So we do have a lot of walls, right, to protect ourselves from these wounds. And the wounds, the five childhood wounds, are abandonment, rejection, betrayal, humiliation, and injustice. And these wounds, they're stuck in us. We remember them. And so we might have, you know, that fear of abandonment, and we might have protection mechanisms. So we don't want to put ourselves in situations where we might want to be abandoned, right? And that's a pattern we might have, and a fear that is driving, right, the show. We might have a deep fear of rejection. So then we never go out on dates. And I'm just giving a simple example, right? We might not do certain things because we don't want to be rejected like we were when we were younger. Betrayal. And we all have like these fears to some extent. We just need to see if any of these are driving the show. One thing I realized the other day really deeply is, when you act from the wound, when you act from that place of hurt, it makes the wound deeper. When you act from the wound, it deepens the wound. And to finish, I just want to, have you guys seen that image? I'm going to send it to you right now. I don't know if you've seen that image. It was famous in Burning Man, of the two adults and the children inside. Yeah. Save and rich downloads. I'm going to just send it through the chat. Because this is a beautiful representation, and this is in the case of relationships, but it's a beautiful representation of how we operate sometimes. We're not operating from the higher self, from the adult that's taking full responsibility. I just sent it through the chat for those of you who can see it. Yeah. So it's two adults, right, that are not speaking to each other, that are hurt because of the other one said. But what it really is that inner child that wants love and that doesn't have the communication, right, and the means to acknowledge their emotions and to say, hey, actually, I just need love. But when I was younger and in my life, I was hurt like this and I was hurt like that. And I'm scared of not being enough, and I'm scared you're going to abandon me. So then I push you away and I argue and I do all these things, but it's really because I'm really, really scared. And I really want you to love me, but I'm too scared to say that. So this is just a small example of the difference between operating from the wound, which is right, and leaving and pushing away and don't, and in romantic relationships, this is a huge place we operate from. Huge place we operate from. Very few people have the communication tools and the emotional intelligence to really have healthy, functional relationships where we can operate as an adult, but still acknowledge our inner child and our inner wounds without fear of being judged or fear of feeling silly. And speaking of our childhood wounding is probably one of the most important things for our partner to deeply understand us and understand our needs and understand our emotions and why they come up. All right. So any questions, thoughts, doubts? Do you want to say something, Andy? No, okay.
I appreciated the Brisbane reference.
Yeah. How is this all sitting? Can you check in, tune in with your body for a moment? Is it landing? Is it too much in the mind?
It's a lot to process.
It is.
I'm intrigued as well to research more on things like the shadow, the mother's wound, like a lot of references I've never heard of before.
I'm happy to send you guys some articles as well. If you haven't logged into the portal, there's an area called resources. Like, for example, also in the week one part of the, what was it? I put it in the video section where the video is. I also put, for example, all of the books that you ladies mentioned on week one. And I'll share with you some really good articles and some notes on this as well. Awesome. In the resources section. Is there any curiosities or, and I know it's a lot, so let it sit with you. No, but anything that's coming up for you or that you're curious about?
Yeah, I was really grateful to make the connection between some of my beliefs and then like things that I'd learned from childhood. So that was, gave me clarity and I think will make it easier to see when I'm sort of thinking in like old patterns. So yeah, that it was really, really useful. So thank you for your energy. It really, really helped me.
That's great, babe. I'm glad to hear.
Uh,
and I know I shouldn't apologize for not having my camera on because we're not meant to apologize, but it's an absolute shit show behind me. So I've got moving boxes, but yeah, I was here with you guys. So yeah.
I shouldn't have said I'm sorry too, but yeah, I didn't want you to take my yawning personally. This puppy kept me up all night crying and annoying my dog.
Oh. Can you pay us back with a puppy photo?
And you can say sorry if you want to apologize for something that you prefer you'd be doing another way, or hey, I'm sorry that I can't be here the way I want to, like, that's okay, as long as you're not apologizing for being you. But thin line there, but yeah.
So I was just thinking about the last part that you said, who wants easy, I want worth it, and I really connect with it. And then, like, the first question that you ask us, like, what thought wasn't really helpful was actually, I need to work hard. And then I was thinking, like, well, I always think, like, I need to work hard because my dad, like, kept saying that if you keep working hard, then it's going to get easier. There's, like, a famous saying by, like, a Russian general that, you know, if you work hard, then if you practice hard, then the fight will be easier. But then, so coming back to, I know that it's not going to be easy to get what you want in life, and like how your ideal you, but then, like, maybe, like, working, I'm just, like, you know, thinking out loud, like, maybe, like, the hard part, like, the hard work is not not in the right direction, like, if I'm making any sense. Like, I tell myself that I have to work hard, and then, like, somehow maybe I'm just, like, you know, making excuse of looking it as if I work hard and reading more books and studying this and taking this degree and trying to prove externally that I'm really working hard and, like, I'm, like, burning my ass off. But then, is it really working hard toward the right direction? And is it, like, you know, helping me to advance where I want to go? And so, like, yeah.
And isn't that pattern of working hard exactly what you have been doing for the past 10 years? Haven't you been working your ass off?
Yeah. But it took me, like, nowhere. And I'm still, like, oh, I don't like this and I don't like that. And now, like, I'm thinking, oh, maybe I don't like anything. Is there anything that I do like?
And you said a phrase in our session that I won't forget. You said, you had your first week of basically doing nothing at home, nurturing yourself, like, you know, reading, you know, doing your thing. And you said it was the first week that you felt you were actually doing something, like, I don't know if the word was useful.
Meaningful.
There we go. And the fact that you had the ability to recognize that, I was like, wow. Like, after all the years you spent working in corporate, that you have 1 week in your home and it was the first week you felt that you actually spent doing something meaningful?
Yeah.
That says so much about your value system, not your father's. What's meaningful for you? And what your definition of success means, which we'll get a lot deeper into.
Mm-hmm.
So that is very interesting. Yeah, Kiara.
Yeah.
How do you recognize if this meaningful for you, it's really for you, or is not something that you are telling yourself it is true because you want to lie to yourself to deny something else?
So you're funny. your mental mind fucks are really funny, and we're slowly going to, as you tap into your intuition and as we do the purpose work that we'll be doing in the next weeks, you are the only one that knows. Nobody else can know. You will be able to discern, because there is no answer to that. Nobody can possibly tell you, but you will slowly have some tools when you start identifying, like the Saturday, where certain things come from, you know, and that already helps you identify, okay, this is, oh, dad, hey, you know, right? Like, hey, grandma, you know, whatever. When you start identifying that, it already makes it very clear what's not yours, you know? And then slowly you'll start being, we'll do many, many exercises and things that will allow you to start tapping into what is yours. And next week we'll be talking about our emotions, which is one of our main GPS systems for this. Okay.
It's because I decided really young to disconnect to my intuition and to start to be super mental.
Which is a very normal pattern.
I needed to do that when I was too young.
And maybe it served you, Chiara, right? So we don't need to judge that or say that it was wrong, but it was a mechanism that you developed because it served you, because you needed it for your survival back then. And now, right, you can see that and you're starting to understand many things. And without judgment, you're like, you know what? That doesn't serve me any longer.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not useful for me where I am right now in my life. I'm going to have to reprogram this. And this is the work we're doing. So don't be hard on yourself though, because you did that. And this
I'm
is
not hard. I had some kind of flashbacks during some yoga. That's why at the moment I am kind of disconnected. And I think there are traumas or things that I really never sorted out or never got, because I didn't have the skill to get what was happening.
Totally. And there's so many layers to this, right? I mean, we've been living for a few decades already. And if we're just starting to do this work now, there's a lot of healing to be done, you know. But we're all pretty young. Some people start this work at 50 and 60 and 70, you know. And then the neuroplasticity, like even biologically, is a lot harder. So we're at a good moment, a very good moment. And this is where I really want to finish where we started, which is with the Maitiri. And we're in this curious self-inquiry, right, with compassion. There is nothing more unfair than judging the past with the eyes of the present. Okay? I'm going to say it again. It is so unfair, unjust to judge the past with the eyes of the present. Don't do that to yourself. Because the past you was trying the best they could at every moment. Okay? And you extending some compassion to yourself in the past, for the decisions you made, for the mistakes you made, is so important. And all you have to do is really thank your past self, because your past self brought you to where you are today. You are everything you are because of the decisions your past self made. So thank God. And there's this quote. It's very simple. It's so simple I forget exactly how it is, but it's basically like, act, like do things until you know better. And when you know better, do better. It's that simple. Like, it's so simple. It's like, live your life. And when you know better, you'll do better. And the only way we learn and do better is through making mistakes. And it's so extending that self-compassion to ourselves, to what we're discovering in ourselves, and doing this work with that mindset and eyes is critical. Otherwise, we fall into this victimization and blame, right? Of our parents, of our past, of society, of the patriarchy, of, no. That's not going to help us. Okay? We're here. We're exactly where we need to be. We're discovering the information that we have to discover when we have to discover it. And for those of you who are spiritual or believe in something beyond just, you know, what we see and touch, all of life is like these cogs that are moving, and it has its timing, and life is a force, just like nature. Nothing in nature rushes, and everything gets done. The flower is not like, I have to be a flower. It just slowly does its thing, and then it becomes a flower, you know? Not rushing to get anywhere, the result. So what I'm saying is trust. Trust where you are right now. Trust that you are seeing what you have to see now, and you will see what you have to see when you have to see it. And this deep trust in yourself, your past self, your present self, your future self, and a trust in life is the same thing, because life is moving through you. You are life. You are life source. And some people call life source God. Some people call it the great spirit. Some call it nature. Some call it divinity. You are something is animating you. And your heart beating and your consciousness is animating you. Trust that which is bringing you alive. All right. And its timing and processes. Remember as well that you guys have the recordings up, so you can always replay and rewatch anything at any time. Okay. Well, beautiful ones, have a beautiful night, evening, morning.